my God. Here we are. We're back. Halloween 2023, baby. It's our favorite time of year here at PCMC.
It's spooky season, everyone has agreed to say.
It's spooky season. I am all for it. And today, it's almost long overdue. Today, well, let's talk about this whole month. We're doing slasher classics, maybe slashix. I don't know if I'm allowed to use that term. Because I know
Shudder
uses it. But I've also seen someone else use it. So it makes me wonder if we could all use
it. Let's just do it.
So slashix. So this month, this October, we will be talking about Halloween from 1978. The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original Friday the 13th, and the original A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Beautiful. What a lineup.
It's going to be incredible, and we love it.
The big four.
It's the spookiest month. And there is a Friday the 13th in this month.
An October Friday the 13th?
Whoa. How thematically relevant. So
I remember when I was a kid, I would always be like, imagine if Halloween landed on Friday the 13th for way too long until somebody was like, Halloween's always on the 31st, you idiot.
Why can't Easter be on a Friday night? Am I right? All of these movies that we're talking about this month all have remakes, sometimes multiple.
Oh, yeah.
All have sequels and spinoffs.
1 million timelines amongst them.
But I think we're going to come to something. I always like to think this is all a critical conversation. And I think comparing these films in our month-long conversation, I'm in every episode. The other people will rotate, as always. I think that we'll find something.
I think so.
Because we're comparing the first of them all. And so, like, the urtext of each one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we always do. Last year we did Witches, and I think we found out we did a lot.
Yeah, because you ruminate on these things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
it's like it's a month-long project.
Yes. This is our first episode, so I'll give a little background on the slasher film before we get into it. But let me say, you know, the thing that I found very interesting, and you tell me if you had this experience too.
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
Was watching this movie, Halloween 1978.
Hate that we have to call it that, but go ahead.
Okay. I have been, right. So I was obsessed with it as a kid. I wrote Halloween fan fiction. I didn't even know it was fan fiction. I was thinking
that today. We both did, because I wrote a full length screenplay in eighth or ninth grade.
I wrote what I thought was a full-length screenplay.
Called The Shape. I remember that.
Yes.
And I wrote one called Halloween Back to Haddonfield.
Wow. So we were pretty cool.
We were. It's in our DNA.
Yes. I had everyone on VHS. Yeah. I've seen them all a million times, except for the last two David Gordon Green ones. They don't count. I was obsessed. When I first was like a kid and I saw Scream and it made me want to like make movies, I became obsessed with Halloween. But it has been a long time since I saw the first one. And
yep.
I love revisiting things years later because there's a cultural memory that we all share. And then when you see the real thing, it doesn't always match up with the cultural memory. So,
very similar experience to you.
Yeah.
I've seen it 1 million times. I do feel like it's in my DNA. It was something that, like, Michael Myers was just, like, a presence in media growing up. And then Scream happened, and Michael Myers had, like, this postmodern rebirth. And then that led to more films. And then I was super obsessed with it. I saw it a bajillion times.
Yeah.
And the last time I think I sat through the whole thing was, like, in the early 2000s. I went to a screening of it, and I watched it on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I remember being really bored.
Uh-huh.
And that was when I was in, like, college.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. So I watched it today.
Yeah.
And so this is what I thought to myself as I was watching and taking notes. I tried as hard as I could to mentally forget everything else.
Like it's fresh, right?
And watch it with fresh
eyes.
Like
this is a new thing.
As if I've never seen it before. Yeah. And I got a lot out of it.
Yes.
A lot this time.
My big headline would be, he's so human.
Yes.
Why?
Why do they mess with that?
I know that in the screenplay they called Michael Myers the Shape, and that he is this brooding shape, this brooding image. But contrary to that, Also in the first movie, anytime we see him, we hear his breathing.
Yes.
Heavy breathing, and it's constant. It never goes away.
And that's how you know he's around.
Right, and his breathing's so heavy, you can read it as sexual.
Yeah.
Again, forget about everything that came after it. Just remember this is its own thing.
Yes.
He kills his sister after she's had sex with her boyfriend, and he sees her naked. Why not? It's sexual.
Right.
He drives a car in it. He does things that he dresses like a ghost. He never does things that clever later on.
Okay, putting on the sheet with the sunglasses over it, so clever.
Yeah.
He's just like a killing machine. He doesn't do anything like.
You're right.
It turns him into
supernatural.
Yes. In the original one, he's a true stalker.
Yes.
He's like stalking and killing them. I was watching it today and I found myself surprised at how many times he pops up in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, like this is cat and mouse. Like that's what made this movie so successful.
Right.
Is that like it's scary
that
he just is always in the background following these girls.
Lori sees him like seven times.
A million times. And then sometimes she gets to the point where you're questioning if she's really seeing him or if she's so scared she's imagining it. Because like when he's standing, there's one scene she's looking out her window. She sees him in the neighboring yard and then he like disappears.
Right.
And it's like, was that really him? Or is she so scared that she's imagining him?
Right.
It's like he becomes ubiquitous.
Right, right. And
it's so moody, so atmospheric.
Right. And for something, for her being like such an important final girl, she only fights with him for the last 15 minutes.
She meets
him 15 minutes from the end of the movie.
When I saw that there were only 15 minutes left.
For the majority of the movie, Lori's story is she's babysitting kids and she's upset that her friend told her crush that he wants to go out with her.
And she's the plain unsexy girl.
Well, her friends are assholes. Her friends treat her like shit.
Another thing that I realized as I was watching it this time with fresh adult eyes was I was like, oh, you're like rooting for these other girls to get killed because they're so mean to her.
Right.
Like when Annie finally gets it, I'm like, thank God I hate this girl. Right? They're so mean to her.
Yeah.
And I know it made me think of like, I had read a long time ago, like some essay in some media class about like depictions of mothers.
Yeah.
And that like Lori is the most natural of a mother.
Well, she's to the children. So the virginal.
She's the virginal mother type. So that's why she gets to survive.
Right, right, right.
And every other teenager is a horrible, horny person.
And will like,
and will
skirt their
responsibilities and are negligent with children.
Right.
And she's not.
Right.
But they're awful. Like at first I was like, God, this actress who plays Annie is horrible.
Uh-huh.
But then I was like, maybe this is a choice and she's supposed to be this annoying.
I don't know if I agree with you that you're supposed to be rooting against them. I just think that's the way it comes out. I think their ribbing is not as gentle as I remember it.
And it's mean.
It feels like they're mean.
It's almost like they clearly are
friends with her.
Yeah, but like the only time, and I was although thinking
they
this are, today,
they're kind of using her.
They're so mean to her
when they're like, "You watch the kid I'm babysitting, so I can go fuck
my boyfriend."
Yeah,
and then the only genuine conversation that Annie and Lori have throughout the whole movie, where Annie's like not giving Lori shit or teasing her, or making fun of her, or bullying her, is in the car. When she's like, you know, you could just ask him to go to the dance. And it's like, in that moment, I felt like Annie was like condescending to her. Like, oh, I feel sorry. I've pushed you too far. You seem like you're going to cry.
Yeah.
They're so horrible to her.
Yeah. And Lori doesn't say a lot.
No.
She's not doing a lot in this movie at all.
No.
Honestly.
Which is why it's such an... Forget it. I don't even want to mention the sequels. Go ahead.
Okay. We're living in a world where they don't exist right now.
Yeah. Oh, can I tell you my big thing?
Sure.
That I guess because Halloween is just so, we grew up with it and so ubiquitous. Yeah. Fresh eyes. I didn't realize Michael being a child was supposed to be a big reveal in the beginning.
Yes.
It's, there's a stalker who's stalking this babysitter. Oh my God, did he hurt the kid?
Because he's outside.
Yeah.
Did he hurt
Michael? Where's Michael?
Right.
And then she says, Michael, and then they take the mask off and it's, oh my God, a little boy's, you've been watching through the little boy's eyes this whole time. That's mind blowing to me because it's so ingrained that Michael Myers killed his sister when he was little. That, like, I've never watched it with those fresh eyes of like, this is the kid who killed her.
Right.
Amazing.
Right. I was thinking to myself, you know, forgetting the other sequels exist, you could have made a sequel, like they made the choice to go more with the supernatural, but you could have made a sequel where there were scenes from his point of view and he's talking, or he was more aggressive, or he's smarter. Like, you know, like maybe we don't see anything. I was going to say we don't see anything from his point of view. We see a lot from his point of view, quite physically, right? But the story isn't his story. Like, if he can drive a car, maybe he can talk.
Right.
Like, I realize that when you watch all of them, you bring the baggage, you bring the definition of who he is from all of it into it. And it's like, if you just watch the first one, he's not that. First of all, he eats dogs.
And strangles a dog.
Yeah. His whole point is to, like, recreate.
Yes. Something. That's another thing that, you know, watching it through fresh eyes. There's a point where Linda and Bob are making out on the couch, and he comes into the frame and he's watching them. And it's the first time ever that I realized that it's almost the exact same shot of what he saw looking through the window of his sister and her boyfriend on the couch.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm recreating that night.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because she was babysitting me.
Right. And she
wasn't being a good caretaker.
Yeah, yeah. Let's wait before we get into it. Let me go back to I said I was gonna give some context. So this is often considered the beginning of their slasher cycle, even though this movie comes out after Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The first slasher movie, really, the progenitor is Peeping Tom from May 16, 1960. Psycho then comes out September 8th, 1960.
Wow.
They're both in the same year, but Hitchcock was influenced by Peeping Tom. And some things that Peeping Tom and Psycho have in common: the point of view of the killer, the idea that psychology is in Halloween, the psychologist is like a cop.
Yeah.
Psychology is the thing that we're like focusing on. Their sexual dysfunction or lack of sexual maturity.
Yeah, yeah.
In Peeping Tom, he kills you with a thing that has a camera on it. So, like, he films you die, and I think you can watch yourself die. And, of course, there's a lot of looking and stuff like that in Psycho.
Right.
So this sort of picks up from those progenitors and begins, which... a cycle which after Halloween you've got the other ones we're talking about this month, Friday the 13th and then Nightmare on Elm Street, although Nightmare on Elm Street I think is itself an outlier.
Yeah, totally.
But there's you know, Sleepaway Camp and Sleepaway Camp 2 and Terror Train and
Prom Night,
which also those two actually have Jamie Lee Curtis in it.
Yeah.
And April Fool's Day, which was like Scream before Scream because it's sort of a deconstruction of it. And people think of that as like the end of that cycle. And Silent Night, Deadly Night, and just so many. Because Halloween is in Halloween, one of the things they copied was putting it on holidays.
Yes.
Which is stupid when you think about it, because obviously Halloween makes sense.
Right, but right.
Fucking.
Although apparently that was
Prom Night.
It was supposed to be the Babysitter Murders, and it was Deborah Hill's idea to make it on Halloween.
Which is brilliant because the aesthetic of the film is so...
it's cozy.
It is. It's this, and I was wondering, like, is it cozy because of how ingrained it is in pop culture, or would I find it cozy when I first watched it? Because I tell you, watching this movie is like drinking a pumpkin spice latte.
It is. There's a jack-o'-lantern in every room of every house.
It's so Americana.
Well, so I wrote that down. This is something I never thought about before because I was never a fully formed human adult.
Sure, 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 sure.
What is this movie saying about suburban America?
Right.
Especially in that Kitty Genovese-ish scene where she's knocking on every door saying, help me, and everybody's turning out the lights on her and not opening their door.
Yeah.
Is this about how in suburbia it's about keeping out the danger element and hiding behind your door in your
house?
Right,
right, right,
right. Nobody comes to help her.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
And there are so many shots of like this monotonous, like every street looks the same suburbia.
Yes. Right. And what is Halloween? It's the one time that we kind of think about death as a culture and bad things as a culture, but still we don't totally.
Right. We dress up and make a cute scene.
And there are no adults in this movie. It's like E.T. in that way.
Yeah.
We hear the teacher's voice. We don't see the teacher.
We see the dad once for like a split second.
Right.
Lori's dad.
Right. We have the dad, the cop dad.
Yeah.
But we don't have the people whose kids that they're babysitting.
No. We don't have the girls' parents.
It's like a world with just teenagers and kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's like that. And I think Wes Craven took this for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
This idea of like, on the surface, it looks like this is the safe place to raise a family.
Right, right, right.
But beneath the surface, there's a lot of darkness. And
right.
One line that I really paid attention to, like this Shakespearean gravedigger character that I never paid attention to before. When he's like, every town has something like this happen.
There was that
one
guy
a couple towns over who took a hatchet, that whole part.
Yeah.
And it's like, kind of like the commentary is like every suburban town has like something bubbles up to the surface that's dark and scary. And then the town shuns that family or creates lore about it. And then that becomes the haunted house.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, the like, Myers house is the haunted house.
Almost like reminds me of like To Kill a Mockingbird, like the Boo Radley house.
Right. See, the sequels went with this whole boogeyman thing. He's the boogeyman. But the boogeyman is just the way that the youngest characters can wrap their brains around him. What we're really watching is an anomaly that doesn't make sense.
Right.
And even Loomis is wrong. Like, I used to love
Loomis all the shit about... Do this whole movie. He's fucking nuts.
I used to love his you know, his...
He's evil.
Yeah, but he's...
But he's wrong.
He's wrong. Yeah. He makes... The way Rob Zombie made his Loomis almost makes sense because he kind of mocked his own Loomis.
And he ended up being just, like, out for money, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's not evil. Like, I always believed all that stuff. Like, that's not how I read it now. He's not evil. Everybody's getting it wrong because everybody's trying to have it make sense.
Right.
Trying to make meaning. Why would a kid kill his older sister, little cute kid, and it doesn't make sense? And everyone's trying to make it make sense, and they can't.
Even the movies then start to try to make it make sense because then they make it like, oh, and starting in part two, Laurie's his sister, so that's why he's after her.
Right.
When it really does... And this is one thing that maybe David Gordon Green got right, which is it is scarier that there's no reason.
But really. I always felt with the David Gordon Green movie, like, why would he care about her at all? Like, in the first movie, he starts stalking her because he sees her in the house when she drops off the key.
Right.
So he clocks her, and then he just starts following her.
Yeah.
So it's almost random.
Yeah. It's just teen...
Why in the sequel would he care at all about Laurie? I always feel like John Carpenter said it himself. When I was writing part two, I had to ask myself, why would he care about this one girl?
Right.
I had to make him her sister.
Right. I've said since day one.
But I also put that out of my head too when I watched it this time. I was like, she's not his sister.
When I was watching it, I put everything out of my head. But like now that we're talking about it, I've said since Halloween 2018 came out, I think the ultimate twist would have been Laurie's spent 40 years waiting for him. She's all gunned up and he walks right by her because she's not a young girl. And then she realizes like, oh shit, he doesn't care about me at all.
He wants to kill young girls.
Yeah, that would have been so much smarter
than
what they did, which is he just needs to kill Laurie for some reason.
Right, right. After I watched the movie, I was like, wow, that was so much better. I loved it as a kid, and then for years I didn't watch it and was like, ah, it's boring, it's too slow, blah, blah. And I watched it and I loved it, but I was like, wow, I loved it in a totally different way than I loved it as a kid.
Me too. And you know what else
I did? We're good. We don't need any more.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
It feels really standalone, and it feels like a simple story. It's simple. It's magic.
Very simple little narrative.
It's just very simple. It's very all the action takes place in one block,
right?
Of one little neighborhood.
And the end where he's shot, and then they look, and he's not there. That's not a sequel setup. That's just a good ending,
right?
Because he's gone now. The anomaly is gone, and life will go on tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. I actually went. What I did to try to get myself in the headspace for this is I went back and I read reviews from 1978
Ooh.
Of it.
Ooh, nice.
Because I wanted to see like, how did people write about this before it was a franchise?
Yes.
And one of the, what I found was that there were, the reviews were initially mixed.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of negative reviews saying that it was a Hitchcock ripoff.
Interesting.
But one of the positive reviews was from Roger Ebert.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote this.
Funny, because later on he became so against slasher movies.
Yeah, so he even alludes to in this that he had positively reviewed Last House on the Left, and he says that he likes this movie for the same reason he liked Last House on the Left, which is it intends to be scary and it's successful and scaring you. Yeah. And the last paragraph is, we see movies for a lot of reasons. Sometimes we want to be amused. Sometimes we want to escape. Sometimes we want to laugh or cry or see sunsets. And sometimes we want to be scared. I'd like to be clear about this. If you don't want to have a really terrifying experience, don't see Halloween.
Interesting.
So his review is just basically like, this is a little movie that wants to scare you and it's successful. It's just, it all started out so small.
Yeah. And when you compare it to the slashers that come after it, it's pretty bloodless.
Yeah, purposefully so.
Yeah, it's really, it's got a lot of dread.
There's a lot of strangulating.
Yes, there's a lot of strangulating, but there's a lot of, like, going back to Hitchcock, like, Hitchcock said the way to create, like, anxiety and tension in the audience is have them know something that the character doesn't. Like, there's a
dramatic
bomb.
Irony,
you're right, yeah. Like, there's a bomb under the table, and the audience knows there's a bomb, but the character doesn't, so the audience is freaked out. That happens all the time in this movie because Michael is always watching. So that's another thing. Like, he's not like gone, like, and then he appears. He's kind of always there if you're watching.
Yes, he's always around.
Yeah. And he's there and we see him and the characters don't. So like with Annie, we know he's stalking her, but she goes out into the backyard and then into the laundry room.
And then, I forgot the keys. I have to go back to the house. It's all tension.
And dread. And then just a very quick, like, he just chokes her.
That stuff is so much better than this shitty, like, I'm jumping out at you, which the new ones do just as much as the other sequels do.
Right.
I mean, this is the only one that does the tension right. Yeah. Even that scene, which, like, is so tense when she's banging on the door and the kid's like, all right. And he's like taking his time coming down to let her in. And he's walking across the street and she's like, hurry up.
Limping.
Yeah.
And well, let's talk a little bit about the music, because the music, which is also done by John Carpenter, is so good.
Okay. Go ahead. I have a lot to say about this.
Okay. I have a lot to say about the music too. When in that scene, you get the dump, 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 dump. Dum dum dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Which I always used to call train noises.
Yes.
But I don't know if they are, but it's just the thing that makes sense in my head to call them train noises.
No, I think they are.
Okay.
And I actually, so this is one thing that I paid attention to today when I was watching. The soundtrack has a lot. I think those are all train noises.
Interesting.
And then there are some parts where you just hear steam.
When he pops out,
and that's like a train letting off
steam.
That's
true.
And then there's a scene where the first dead body you see is next to a train station, and a train's coming.
That's going into Haddonfield.
And I think that, like, since John Carpenter is an artist in this way, I think that he was thinking about trains. And I think that it's like,
they're unstoppable.
A train is unstoppable. It's coming. It's gone. It's on one path and it's just going to keep going.
And it's
percussive. And it's coming. And the closer it gets, the louder it gets to you.
Interesting. Right?
And when Michael comes closer, the music gets louder and more pounding.
Yes.
Right? And it's just going to go where it's going to go. And you're not going to be able to stop it. So I think that was purposeful. And I do think that those are train sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
Another thing that was just totally dropped from the rest of the movies. Right. As a motif.
The opening, when I turned it on, like, talk about like a slipping into a warm old robe. Like, just the bump, bump, just the and then the pumpkin, the jack-o'-lantern, and it's just like the orange font.
But didn't you find, I found that I had to keep reminding myself to be present. Because I've seen this movie so many times that it came on and I was like, oh, maybe I'll go on my phone. Like, I've seen this movie a million times.
Like, really,
and then I kept saying to myself, like, no, I really watch this movie again.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you're not really watching it, it can seem boring. But if you are really watching it, it's not. Because there really is stuff always happening and his presence is always there.
Right.
Even like when Laurie's like walking around and like it seems like she's doing nothing. She's waiting for her friend to pick her up. Michael's there. His car is always there.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's that great shot where Loomis, where, you know, like, three things happen out in front of the store. Annie pulls up and talks to her dad, drives off. Then Loomis comes up to the dad.
Yeah.
And then when Loomis turns around, Michael turns in the car.
Yeah. It's really
good stuff. It's simple. But it works in such a simple way.
Yeah.
And it's not fair that, you know, later on people malign a lot of which is fine. You know, I like all horror. You know, I think horror is good for us. But, you know, a lot of the later ones are much more trashy and also much more sexual. There's not a ton. There's some boobs in this.
Yeah.
But it's not. The kids are having sex, but you don't see it that much. It's not like a boob fest like some of the later.
No.
You see Linda's boobs once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some of the later slasher movies, like that's one of the things, that's one of the tropes, is you're going to see naked girls and murder.
Yeah.
And you don't really have that here. Not a ton of like actual explicit sex, not a ton of explicit violence.
No. Yeah. There's not a lot of blood.
And really, if you plot out the plot, it's very simple. And Loomis is doing nothing, really.
Loomis is just exposition.
And he spends half the movie standing in a bush.
Yes.
And then turns around and the car he's been looking for is literally right there. Was it always there?
Yeah, yeah. I do. My favorite line of his is, "Get your ass away from there," when he yells at the kid.
Yeah.
I really like the red herring of like they think he's going to go back to the house.
Yes.
And they're in the wrong spot the whole time.
I might be wrong in this, but the three kids that go up that he yells at, I think they're the three kids that were bullying.
They are.
Yeah, yeah. I never put that together.
Tommy, yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Also, can I ask this? Yeah. Something that I guess I never really thought about before. We always think of Scream as being like the first, like, oh, this is self-referential. But in this movie, they're watching horror movies all night.
Yeah, they're watching The Thing.
That's kind of new for it. Right. That was a new thing, wasn't
they're
it?
They're sitting. That's
on Halloween, yeah. And they're watching scary movies, and it's a scary movie.
Well, I would argue that Forbidden Planet isn't a scary movie. No, but they are watching The Thing. Yeah. They watch both.
Okay.
That's a really interesting point.
And then
point.
In the background, you hear the voice say, like, stay tuned for the thrilling conclusion. And it's, like, right before the end of Act 3 of Halloween. Yeah.
It's interesting because... It's kind of meta. The Americana Halloween was up and running at that time, even before this movie. Yeah. And now it feels like this movie's a part of it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I like about this movie is, if you love Halloween, it gives you all the Halloween things. Like, you've got a haunted house, you've got trick-or-treating, you've got jack-o'-lanterns, you've got
old black and white horror movies.
Right, the only thing you don't have is, like, kids, like, throwing eggs or whatever.
You see some of that in Halloween, too, but yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a kid with the razor blade and the apple in Halloween,
too. So, Donald Pleasance, who plays Dr. Loomis.
On one.
He is, well, it's...
Well, he was a B-actor, wasn't he?
The biggest movie he was ever in probably was A Great Escape, where he plays a sort of small role. And then he was a villain in James Bond. I don't know if he was how many movies he was in. Maybe it was just one. I don't know. Dr. Evil is based on the character he played from James Bond. This is probably his biggest thing
it's
in a life.
It's so broad, his performance.
When it's not completely sleepwalking. It's either 1 or 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's just like he's just throwing it away. He's just like barely trying. He's like barely, yeah, all right. And then sometimes he's like, ah!
It is like he's in his own movie.
Yeah.
And then they only intersect in the last minute.
You're right. Right, he shoots, yeah. And him shooting Michael is like the only thing... Like really the only effect he has on the film. But it's funny.
I mean, his thing is, I guess what's interesting is, like you said, it's so based in psychology.
Yeah.
Like Psycho. But his thing is like, I'm a psychologist who's now like reformed and now I believe in evil.
Right, right. Cause like, there's no psychology in what he's.
No, he's like, I tried to treat him and I just saw somebody who just wants to kill.
Yeah. And what's interesting, and I don't know if I remembered this, is, the reason why he's going to pick him up in the beginning is because he has a parole hearing. He could be set free.
Yeah. And, well, wasn't that a cut scene that they show in the TV version?
Well, no. There's some TV version stuff that was shot later.
Oh, okay.
With two. Like Loomis goes into his room and he sees he's written sister in the wall. Later. Right. But there is like in the first scene when he's driving in the car with the nurse... The nurse is like, what do you want him to be on when he's in front of the judge? And he's like, Thorazine. And she's like, well, he's going to be half asleep. And he's like, well, that's the idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. That's a terrible thing to be like but he's also, he's obsessed with it because he's dedicated his life to like making sure he never gets out.
It's also so scary, that scene when she's like, since when do they let them just wander around? And you see them all like in gowns, like hospital gowns, like wandering around at night in the dark.
Yeah.
And so it kind of like is evocative of like Night of the Living Dead.
I'm so glad you just said that word because that was such a big thing for me. This movie is dark. And I don't mean thematically. I mean
visually.
It is dark. There are whole scenes where there's like one small
source of light.
So like a literal black, like which you don't get anymore and you can't get with digital. Right? You have to have 35 millimeter film to get that kind of pitch black, matte black. I mean, like that great shot where she's in the doorway and then his face just sort of just
materializes.
Right. It's because like you can only do that with a total black void. And like when the boyfriend gets stabbed, the one with the glasses, the one who gets stabbed and he's like put into the wall and Michael looks at him. That's all. There's just the one light outside.
Right.
It's so masterfully dark. It's also great. Which also I think makes it feel cozy.
Yeah. The mask too. Like the mask is so iconic now. But it's like imagine it was your first time seeing that mask.
You don't get a great
look at it. It's scary as shit.
Yeah, it's true.
Because it's so blank. It's a human face that's blank.
Right.
That's what makes it so scary.
It looks a little like William Shatner. But not. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, what even is that mask?
Right. Right. And why'd he pick it up? And of course, in the other movies, he always goes for the same mask. Why? That makes sense. Stupid. It's stupid.
Stupid.
I mean, in the script, it was a clown mask. And I think it's smart that they just had the instinct to do something different.
Well, in the beginning.
But it would make sense as a clown mask. Yeah.
It'd be maybe a little scarier as a clown mask.
I don't know.
It depends on how you feel about clowns.
You know, very early on, maybe even the second episode of PCMC, I don't remember. But very early on in PCMC, I did an episode that was about can sequels ruin an original? And I was thinking about that when I was watching this because I was thinking, obviously, one film can't change the context of another film.
The legacy can be altered.
Right. And the cultural idea of it.
Yeah.
If more of it is schlock than not, then that's the cultural definition of it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, would we still remember Halloween if there weren't other Halloween movies? And I think yes.
I think it'd be like a classic like Psycho.
Yeah, I think it would be actually more elevated.
Yeah.
It would be just as famous, but thought better. People would think better of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. What else? I took a lot of notes when I was... I'm just going to go through my notes. Jamie Lee's a good actress.
She is.
And she's a great actress now. But let's be honest. It was stunt casting that they put her in
this. Of course.
They only put her in here because she's the daughter of the star of Psycho.
Yeah.
And it got her front of the door. I mean,
she's good, though.
Yeah.
She's not bad in this role.
Yeah.
I also wrote, does he follow Tommy? He follows Tommy. And thought that I've never had before was, does he follow Tommy because he reminds him of himself?
Maybe. That's the first real jump scare when Tommy runs into him.
Yeah. The Tommy-Lori relationship is like him and his sister.
Right. Except Lori isn't having sex.
Right.
She can't even talk. She can't even ask a boy to the dance.
Right.
She's so
vulnerable and like...
And she's dressed as like a school mom.
Yeah.
She's in some ways...
I like when she's like, the guys think I'm too smart. And she's carrying like a million books.
Yeah. And the other one's like, I don't bring my books ever. Yeah.
I wrote some random things. These kids are so horny.
Oh, yeah. Wait, can we talk about...
Rip Lindsay's clothes off. That line does not age well.
Yes.
Well, I'll rip your clothes off. You rip my clothes off. Then we'll rip Lindsay's clothes off, who's like 5 years old. She's like 10.
That is inappropriate.
It's very inappropriate. Very weird. But
can we talk about what... what's that one's name? Not Annie, the other one.
Linda.
Can we talk about Linda and her boyfriend and what the crazy shit that they're doing?
They're in a stranger's house.
They're fucking in the bed of a stranger.
Yeah.
That is
And then going to drink their beer.
Yeah. That house is the house Annie is babysitting a kid in.
It's crazy.
That is a complete stranger coming into your bed and fucking somebody.
Yeah, it's so weird.
I never put that together. I was like, this is insane what they're doing.
And it's like, I can't ask myself.
In their bed, under their sheets. Are the parents
supposed to be out all night, like overnight? Because how are you not terrified that they're just going to walk in at any second?
I don't know. It leads to that idea of parents just being like this vague presence.
Yeah, and they're just like fucking in a complete fucking stranger's house.
In someone's bed.
In someone's marital bed.
They would come in and they would, like, if it was Annie, they would know it's the babysitter. If they came in, they'd be like, who are these fucking strangers fucking in our bed? What is happening here?
Yeah.
So when Michael kills Linda's boyfriend and pins him up on a thing. He does that famous moment where he like turns and looks. And again, the other movies milked it so much. They did They did it like
so many times.
They do it so many times, and it works so well in this movie because it's like this moment of humanity. But like I was saying before, he is very human, and I do wonder if it's sexual for him, like Peeping Tom,
like Psycho.
Yeah, like Psycho. Like he's breathing so hard. Is he coming when he's killing these girls?
I mean, he. It's certainly suggested, especially since...
Or is he repressing it and that's still he's still horny? Like,
But especially since early on, you think it's him on the phone and it's like an obscene phone call.
Right, he's breathing so hard, but he's never running. So why is he breathing so fucking heavy if he's not turned on?
Right, yeah.
I love in the classroom. It's a classic classroom with teachers talking about something thematically important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How'd she know?
Yeah, talking about fate.
And of course, Laurie knows the answer.
The bullies that bully Tommy, they're the ones who bring up the word boogeyman. They go, the boogeyman's going to get you.
Yeah.
And like I said, Tommy brings it up. This whole thing, like he's the boogeyman. It comes from the end where she says to Loomis, he's the boogeyman, which is a clever thing for the only dialogue they share together.
Yeah. I was going to say, I actually think that the boogeyman stuff doesn't work that well, actually.
Well, like I said, I think it's just a kid trying to make sense of this.
And she's reduced to just like a crying child.
Yeah. He's not a boogeyman.
Right.
He's a like his name is Michael Myers. He's a person. Right. And we don't know.
Although he's credited as the Shape.
Yeah. We don't know why he did what he did. And that's the like that's the thing that's interesting because there's no answer given to it either.
No.
It's a mystery film with no answer. Like we have this devastating thing in the beginning. Like you said, it's a shock if you're seeing it for the first time.
Right.
This child killed his sister. And then at the end, it's never explained. We never give an answer for why he did it. And that core mystery is what's so fascinating. And they've spent a million sequels trying to like dig into it. And it's like... You don't need to.
I know. Well, that's the thing, like diminishing returns. Like the more you dig into and try to explain it, the less scary it gets.
Yeah. It's such a slow burn for a movie, too.
It is.
What about when he's driving and he stops?
Oh, that's they're so like, scary.
Yeah. They're like, hey, I forget what they say.
She's like, speed kills. Which I don't, is it because he's driving slow that she says that?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because he's not going that fast.
But then later, Laurie says the guy who is driving fast. So I was like, huh, I don't get what this is supposed to be. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. There are a couple of things that don't make sense. Like, also, the father would definitely smell the weed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But Lori questions that. She's like, yeah. I think he smelled it.
Yeah.
That's the only bad thing she does. She's not good at it.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
No, what's funny is this was filmed in the summertime, and it's such a cozy Halloween movie because they were so good with the props and the dry leaves that they would put all over.
Yeah.
But really... It's quite obvious when you really are looking. Like, yes, there's dry leaves on the ground, but there are trees that are green and grass
that
is green.
Yeah, it's true.
It's very clearly not full, but they're so good with the leaves. And, like, you see, like, the leaves blowing. And, like, when Lori comes into her bedroom, the curtains are billowing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even at night, like, I don't know if this was a happy accident or how he, like, because it was such a small, like,
that the windows small open
production. No, the like that her hair is always blowing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The wind is so like it's there's such a presence of the night itself.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And it's about one night.
One crazy night. Yeah, and it's again, it's small. It's not like even in like the David Gordon Green ones that are supposed to be like elevated horror and they're supposed to be direct sequels to this one. Halloween still looks like everybody's out being crazy. Like it's a party in the streets. Like in this it's movie, like you just spare. See like you just see like a few kids quietly trick or treating with their parents.
There's not a lot happening.
Like,
it's not, very quiet.
Like it looks like a real Halloween.
Yeah, I love the shot where Tommy looks out the window and he sees Michael like silhouetted in front of Lindsay's house.
Yeah,
it is. They get so much from the geography of the two houses across from one another.
Yeah,
Which
neither one is hers.
Yes. Yes.
Also, like they really played up like how virginal she is. Like the fact that she brings a pumpkin for them to carve. Like she's the only one who takes her babysitting seriously.
Yeah,
and she brings knitting. She likes to knit.
Yeah,
to pass the time.
Right,
and then she ends up stabbing him with the knitting needle. But like it's established, like this teenage girl knits.
Right, which going back to Carol J. Clover, that's like a phallic thing.
Yeah,
because remember Carol J. Clover's whole thing with the final girl theory was that the reason male audiences like watching horror movies is because it's like a boy becoming a man.
Right.
At some point, the final girl becomes masculine by
penetrating.
Yeah. Taking the
phallic,
which
symbol.
Is, you know, it's interesting, although it's filled with, that's filled with bullshit.
Yeah.
Including the fact that we've done qualitative studies now and found that actually many females did watch these movies.
Right.
So it's not just for males.
Right.
But yeah, so the fact that she pokes him with that, and you know, let's talk about how annoying the kids are. Here's the problem. They're 12, but they seem like they're written as 6.
Okay, so I've thought a lot about this. Is it possible that it was not only the 70s, but it was also the Midwest, so it was just a more innocent time and place?
I don't know. He seems like such a baby.
But I think they're supposed to be, I don't think they're supposed to be 12. I think they're supposed to be like 10.
Okay.
And maybe they're just like kind of babyish.
I don't know. I do like the part where Lindsay's like, I believe you, Tommy.
Yeah.
And Laurie's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. The kids are annoying. That's future Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Kyle Richards, who comes back for Halloween Kills.
I bet she does.
But not that kid. Anthony Michael Hall plays that kid in the new ones.
Yeah. What about in Halloween 6? He was played by Paul Rudd.
By Paul Rudd, yeah. And then she was, Lindsay's character is in the original sequels too, as a teenager in 4 and 5.
Yeah, but they never totally
acknowledge it.
Yeah, they never.
But there's a teen named Lindsay.
Yeah, it's implied, but they never really sell it.
And there's a Tommy too, I think.
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Because they would be teenagers in the 80s.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, think about where we've come. We were just talking about how simple it is. This movie, this is now a franchise that has like 10 different timelines.
Yeah.
And remakes. Yeah. It's so much.
Yeah. It's you don't need it.
It's less is more.
He didn't want to do more.
You know,
John Carpenter didn't want to do more.
Back then, I think what we know now is that like sequel, if anything was successful, sequels truly were a cash grab.
Yeah.
And it was very often like, nowadays, sequels are made with a bigger budget than the original.
Yes.
It used to be, the model was make a shitty sequel on no budget, use a lot of unused footage from the original, and we'll just make some money.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like, that was a lot of, including The Exorcist 2 was like that.
Right.
Like, and that's why it was just like, let's make a shitty sequel.
Yeah.
We'll make some money off of it.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what Halloween 2 is.
Here's a note I have. Linda's boyfriend says, I'll be right back.
Yes, I noticed that.
Scream then makes a lot out of. All right, so we were talking about her friends. Lori's kind of a wet rag.
We just said that she's so adorable.
But I kind of do.
She's very immature.
It's kind of like, come on, Lori. Like, come on.
I don't know that it's so unrealistic, though.
No, I don't know
there
if it's unrealistic.
There are kids that are just late bloomers.
I don't think it's unrealistic. It's just kind of like,
She's just really shy and socially awkward.
But by the way, going into the closet, it creates a great scene. But that's the stupidest thing a person can do. Why does she go into the closet?
Because she's young and scared, I guess.
Yeah.
But it does create a great visual.
I like that we do see Michael's face in this, and it's normal looking. It just has, he has a weird looking eye, but I think it's from the needle that she just put in his eye.
I think, I always, I'm like, his face looks like the mask when I see it.
Right.
But
it's pretty plain.
I think in this new one, I think in this latest one, you see his face too. I don't know. He gets shredded or something.
Who could?
Because he's still supernatural.
Yeah. I like that Michael really makes like a haunted house for her. Like, and that's a great sequence. Like when Lori goes across the street, and it's a slow burn too. It's like you follow her across the street. Yeah. She goes into the house, and then she finds Annie on the bed with the Judith Myers gravestone. And then she finds Linda in the closet, and then Linda's somewhere, and then the boyfriend's in the closet. It's really like a house of horrors.
Yeah.
And then she runs across. Yeah. Like, it's such
that door just opens itself right up. But it's fun. She finds all three bodies at once.
Yeah, it's a real haunted house
scene.
And it's the first time she knows that there's danger.
Yeah.
We know that. Yeah. There's danger.
Yeah. And then, you know, I wrote down, I always forget that guy who you see dead for the car. Like, there is another person who's killed in this movie. It's just a nameless character who's killed for the car.
Oh, right.
You just see the camera pans over, and Loomis doesn't even see him, but he's, like, hidden in the bushes or something.
Yeah. I love the end, by the way, after he shoots him, and then we see all the empty spaces.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, here's everywhere we've been, but also, like, here's where he could be.
And you hear him breathing.
And he's, right, and you hear him breathing, so he's present, but he's also nowhere.
Yeah.
To me, it strengthens the thing that I liked about it this time, that it's just this, it's like a, it's this anomaly. It's this crime. Well, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Let's see what else I got in my notes.
Linda's totally stuff. This is kind of fun.
All her stupid shit.
That's PJ Souls, who was also in Carrie. So she's in 2 '70s horror classics.
She's also in Stripes. Horror movie. What
would happen to her? Oh, I know. She stopped being attractive, so Hollywood stopped putting her in things. Because it was the '70s and eighties.
This movie, especially compared to other slashers, it has, if I could speak French for a minute, it has élan, right? Elan, right? It has a sophistication and a style. And for somebody who's like, it's his first big movie, it's kind of amazing how steady his hand is at creating this. Yeah.
Skillful. I have long felt, though, that as I'm sure is the truth with many other films where women and men are partners, just based on the pure shit that he's created.
Yeah.
Versus this, I think a lot of what makes it good probably came from Deborah Hill, and she doesn't get enough credit for it. Probably. I would bet, because I know that she did she punched up the script.
Sure,
she had a lot of say or like creative input into it, and you know, John Carpenter gets all the credit, but again, he's made a lot of other shitty movies. So like, I wonder if she probably. And she made only a couple of other movies, one of which is Adventures in Babysitting, which is like
another
the non-horror version of Halloween, where they're watching Halloween on the TV at one point.
Yeah.
So, and that's a good movie. So maybe, I bet you a lot of that stuff comes from her, and she just doesn't get the credit.
Well, she always said that she wrote the girls' part, and he wrote Dr. Lewis's stuff.
Which is like, which one is better written?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But
the fact that Carpenter is the director and makes the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Is, you know.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant soundtrack.
Yeah. I always forget that in the beginning you hear a poem. And
oh yeah, the kids singing it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a real poem or if it was written for the movie. I couldn't find, every time I looked it up, and all I could find was from Halloween.
It might be fake. Just like that song she sings is fake.
What song she sings?
When she's walking down the street, and she's like, "Me and you, and then they made it real for one of the new sequels. Oh. You hear it in the background. I just want to get you alone or whatever.
Oh yeah, black cats and goblins and broomsticks and ghosts, covens of witches with all of their hosts. You may think they scare me. You're probably right. Black cats and goblins on Halloween night, trick or treat.
It's so grounded in Halloween.
Yes,
like so much. And that sounds stupid because it's called Halloween, but like. The series almost forgets that, I think.
Right.
It's almost like the series becomes like these things happen to happen on Halloween.
Yeah.
But it really is. And then you get into six where it's like on Halloween night, his powers are at their strongest.
And there's a cult that's controlling him.
It just so happens, I guess, that on two Halloweens, he went on a killing spree. And that makes it, it's like, again, it's like lore. It's like commenting on lore, but also becomes lore. Yeah. It's like the movie itself is an urban legend.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, it's kind of like the babysitter
story.
That's
one of the things I actually liked about the fact that Laurie wasn't in part 4 and 5. Like, it's like him and her, both Michael and Laurie are both gone from the world.
Right.
And there's just this story.
Yeah.
I actually liked, I haven't seen them in literally 20 years, so they might be awful. But I liked 4 and 5 a lot when I was younger.
4 was very well reviewed. 5 was not as much.
Yeah. I always thought 2 was a drag.
2 sucks. And it's a shame because that's the only other Carpenter one.
Yeah.
But I watched it. I actually watched two recently for some reason. It was on TV or something, like last Halloween maybe.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, this is bad.
It's just not good.
It's just so, you could feel the 80s coming off of it like stink.
Yeah, she's got that horrible wig.
And that wiggy, wiggy wig. And it's like, oh, this is like a million slashers have come out now. And now this is trying to be one of its imitators.
Yeah, yeah. It loses that long. Isn't in there anymore.
It's so shitty. You could tell it was made for like a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah, it was paid for a dollar. Yeah, it's, and Lori doesn't do anything in it.
No, nothing.
But what is
she
doing?
And
she
didn't
want
to come back.
No,
she, because by that point she was a pretty established actress.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, it is funny that she did Terror Train, and then
she did. But I mean, but she started as early as the 80s. She started taking other roles and like more serious things.
I think her big. I might be totally wrong.
The Fish Called Wanda.
No, I think her big breakout from the horror scene was Trading Places.
Oh,
like because that was a comedy, and she had a bigger role in it.
Well, she did a string of like comedic roles, True Lies, and
it's interesting. Like,
and now she's in Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, is Madame Leota.
Yeah,
it really feels like an urban legend.
Yeah,
in its simplicity.
Yeah,
and its blankness.
Yeah,
like it looks like any block,
and
any
kid. It could be, and these kids could be like, oh, a friend of mine's cousin, or whatever. Like. Average American kids in the Midwest.
Yeah. So
it also feels very California-y, even though I'm sure it was shot in California, even though it's supposed to be Illinois.
Yeah, right. It's in Haddonfield, Illinois.
Which is not real, right?
There is a Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
But not a Haddonfield, Illinois. Yeah. But, you know, it's just, I love, like, to be like, I don't know, it's like a tone poem. Like, I hate when people say that. It's like, when I think of Halloween, I think of like houses and jack-o'-lanterns and then like dark living rooms that are illuminated by TV sets.
Yeah.
And like,
and it has all of that.
And friends talking to one another and carving a jack-o'-lantern. And it has all of that. It has, to me, it's like the Beastel or Bistel, whatever, those old Halloween decorations. Like, it just, it feels so Halloween, like it is the definition of Halloween.
Yeah, the only thing that it doesn't have prominently featured is none of the characters are wearing costumes. You see some people in costume in the backgrounds.
Yeah, it's true.
But none of the kids aren't wearing costumes. The kids don't go trick-or-treating.
He's wearing a karate costume.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
She's not. Lindsay isn't wearing anything.
They don't go trick-or-treating, though. That's odd.
No, they don't. They don't.
I don't know. Maybe not every kid goes or went. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe
it
just worked for the screenplay for them not to.
I'm sure.
It is nighttime. Maybe they went during the day.
Yeah, yeah. You do follow a whole day.
Yeah. Yeah. She says, I'll pick you up at 6:30.
Yeah.
And then by the time, I like that drive at dusk, and then by the time they get to the house, it's dark.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, the atmosphere is just like really well done.
Yeah, yeah. I like when they're in the car talking, and he's clearly, the camera's in the back seat, and they're like smoking, and it's just a little dark. Like, I like.
And it gets so dark, it gets dark so early in the fall.
Right. You know, when a movie goes straight from bright to dark, like, it's always good when you have that in between, like, where you can really feel like it's changing.
I bet they had to like really time that well to get the light right.
It's like, I love at Disney, if you go to the Haunted Mansion like around dusk, so when you get out it's night, because it's night in there all the time.
Yeah.
And so when you come out and it's
sometimes
day,
it's
when it was night,
disorienting.
It's like, oh, I was just in the night. This was a really good experience. I was a little bit worried that I was going to watch it and be like, oof, this is not good. Well, I was a dumb kid.
What's funny is, like I said, the last time I saw it, I was in college, which was not a full adult, but like, I wasn't young. And I remember,
but it's a long time ago.
Was a long time ago. It was a long time ago. But like, I remember being super bored. And now today I wasn't. So it's like, was I just not watching it the right way?
Probably. But I was too. I remember being like, I don't know, maybe I was too like screamy in my head. Like, I wanted more of everything. Like,
yeah. Like, I don't think I could do this with Scream, though. I don't think I don't think I could watch it fresh. I think it's, I've just seen it too many times.
The last two times I saw Scream 1, I did this. I forgot everything I knew. And the thing that stood out to me as I forgot is how melodramatic it is. It's a lot of like melodrama that I think even the other Scream movies don't have.
Like
Like, and after, like,
crying about my mom.
Yeah, like, it's like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the, even two and on to six, like, don't have that.
Well, did you see that meme I sent you of Bea Arthur? It's like the killer in every Scream movie, and the caption is, well, her mother was a slut.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really the killer in every Scream.
Well, I think we kicked off Halloween 2023 in a great way.
Yeah, I think we did a great job. I think this one's going to be hard to top, and I'm excited to listen.
Did I say your name at the beginning, or have we done this whole episode without an introduction?
I'm Anthony Buongiorno, everyone. I don't think you did. Maybe you did. I think you did.
I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm here with Anthony Hanged from a Tree Buongiorno.
I don't like that.
No?
I don't know if I like that.
Hanged from a Tree.
Anthony Hanged from a Tree. Okay.
The E rhymes?
Yeah.
It's hard to do a spooky name with you.
Yeah, it's tough.
Anthony. Last year I called you Anthony Fauci.
Buongiorno. It's so scary to the right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, this has been PCMC. Happy Halloween. We'll be back next week with more Halloween fun. We end our episode by saying,
go bye-bye.